Okay, we're going to have a great session today. While we've got everyone on the line, we keep the lines open.
Michael
so you
from
ask
Los
questions.
Angeles Conservation Corps.
Hey, Michael, how are you?
Hi. I was going to leave my microphone unmuted and chew on potato chips the entire time, if that's okay.
Yeah, that's what I'm.
Oh,
I was
but
just
don't forget to get your
that.
Dog. You got to get your dog barking in the background too.
Well, the only thing worse than that is putting us on hold so we can listen to music for the next 30 minutes. So, yeah, I was just going to say, if you're on a speakerphone, be real. Have everyone in the room quiet. We don't want to hear your side conversations. Or don't put us on hold so we get your music. But if you want to put us on mute, that's just fine. But we do. You are on an open mic, so that's just a warning. And the way we're set up, we'd like to have everyone contribute. And these are informal, so you can break in and ask questions as we go along if there's something you want to hear about. We've got a special guest today, and we want to get to Janet as soon as possible. But first, let's check out what's happening in Washington. Heather keeps in touch with Myra's replacement. And Rachel in Washington, and we are expecting the RFP to come up almost immediately. So, Heather, any news?
All right. Well, we don't have any real new news from HQ at this time. You know, we're still looking at sort of the same tentative time frame they told us last PLC, which was anytime towards the end of March, which we're getting near the end of March, or maybe into mid-April. So keep your eyes out. We will definitely push it out on the listserv if we hear anything else in regards to the RFP coming out, and we will definitely let you guys know. But as of right now, we don't have any additional updates different from what we told you 2 weeks ago during the last PLC session. I do want to thank everybody that responded to the scan I sent out looking at the 2019 All Grantee meeting. I know we're kind of shifting around the dates a little bit when you were kind of looking at for certain windows, and that has to do with some various reasons. But we had amazing response from you guys for that real quick one question scan, and we really appreciate it because that all factors into the decisions when we make things and when we look at certain dates. So I did definitely want to thank everybody for participating in that scan. And I'm sure Mike was going to mention this, but we do have a fantastic PowerPoint that was put together for this presentation. So if you guys hadn't had a chance to look at it yet and wanted to follow along as we go in with our presentation today, you can go to brownfields-toolbox.org, click on the PLC Sessions tab, and go to Session 208. You'll see a link to the presentation listed right there on our webpage.
Great. As we go along and we finalize these dates, we'll be sending out information and all the grantee meeting and, of course, the RFP, which you don't have to worry about finding out about the RFP when it's issued. You'll get it from us on both the PLC listserv and our main listserv, and then EPA sends out lots of announcements, including the usual webinars that EPA has concerning the RFP. And then we'll be discussing best practices, which will help you in answering all the evaluation criteria. So from now on, as soon as that comes out, we've been working on best practices that our successful grantees use to address these various issues, critical issues of a job training program. We're going to focus on those best practices, which are also, by coincidence, the evaluation criteria. So it'll give you a good fresh start to try to respond to your proposal as soon as it comes out. So with that, we're going to turn this over to Janet. Now, this is actually the Northern New Mexico and Santa Fe Community College's second Environmental Workforce Development Program. They had one in 2011, and they're in a very challenging community. We're talking about 22 Native American tribes that have 43% unemployment. We're talking about communities that are 20 to 30% below poverty levels. Their Hispanic populations are pushing 80%. It's a very challenging area, and they and I'll let Janet explain this, but they had a grant in 2011. They kind of went into a little bit of a hibernation, and I'm saying this for those of you who may apply and not get a grant. You may have a grant and then maybe you don't get a new grant. Well, they came back with a vengeance in 2017, and I think they built their program, as Janet will probably explain, but they developed an incredible program. And the PowerPoint that you're going to see, or I would strongly encourage you to look at after this presentation or during it, we consider this as a best practice in terms of developing an awareness for people who may want to join your program, and then recruiting those people and telling them about your program and getting them to you. So we're addressing in this session the whole idea of developing an awareness for environment workforce development jobs and guiding those people into your program. And if you look through this, it's a very stepwise, excellent presentation of what they're doing at Santa Fe Community College. So with that, Jen, I'm going to turn it over to you and let you walk us through this this PowerPoint you developed, and then tell us a little bit about your program.
All right. Well, I want to thank everybody for coming and listening to this. I don't want to misrepresent that this is easy. The presentation that you have that I forwarded to Mike and to everyone is the presentation I use in my recruiting and my information sessions. So it's designed to try and, you know, interest people in this career field. We have so far trained 112 people, and I'm looking to put 30 to 35 people in my next training cohort that begins May the 20th. We have a very generalized curriculum trying to provide a maximum career path opportunities for people who want to get into the environmental profession in the handling of hazardous materials. One of the biggest challenges that I face is a lot of people, especially in northern New Mexico, are really not aware of all of the rules and regulations and requirements when you are handling hazardous materials. But if you look at on page 11 of the presentation, on the map that I downloaded from the BLS, you can see that we have a great need for a locally developed environmental workforce because of all the cleanup that's going on in the northern New Mexico area at our mines, at oil fields, and at Los Alamos National Laboratories. So the first thing I have to do is try and to explain to people what environmental work is and what an environmental technician is and the kinds of things that we do, and that it's not just I have to fight usually when people say environmental, they think of recycling or bugs and going out and, you know, doing what I call affectionately bugs and bunny work. There's a lot more that I'm focusing more on the hazardous material handling aspects. The focus of this is, you know, how do we develop the community awareness for these careers? And as you can see, I spend an awful lot of time explaining what the EPA means by an environmental workforce, and that would be on the fourth. Somebody put us on mute or hold. Can everybody hear me?
Thank you for calling the City of Springfield offices. We are sorry.
Hello?
For the delay.
Yes, I can hear you. I had to unmute myself.
Okay. So should I just carry on?
I can hear. We're just on mute.
Okay. All right. So what I'm trying to do when I'm in this area of northern New Mexico, besides just educating people about what the what environmental jobs are, I'm also trying to show them what kind of job opportunities there are. Those of you who are in rural communities probably have some of the same kind of challenges that we face, in that most people and most of my applicants are coming from jobs that are in retail, like Target or Walmart or Costco, or working for fast food places. Although I've had a lot of people have been working as dental technicians. So I have to show people explain to them what the different kinds of environmental technician and or environmental protection scientists do. And then can everybody see the charts that I've put in there. I also try to show people what the salaries are or the what they can expect to get paid, because we have a very low expectation in our area about what a good salary is. A lot of people think $10 or $11 an hour is a great salary, when most of my graduates start out at $15 to about $17 an hour. And many of my graduates end up at $68 to $75K within about 12 months after they graduate. So the numbers that I got here on this presentation, I downloaded from the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. And how many of you use the Bureau of Statistics, Labor Statistics, to get information for your area? Does anyone?
On occasion, but the Iowa Workforce Development Organization also provides their own reports for us based on our specific workforce regions.
Thank you for calling.
So we use that a lot as well.
Yeah. My workforce development doesn't have that many. Their numbers came from BLS, so that's why I went straight to BLS, because their numbers. And then I also go around and I talk to a number of employers too, but I try to use the what's considered public access or public domain things to try. So if anybody questions me about them, I have a finger that I can point to. One of the things that we're trying to do is in our recruitment strategies is there's absolutely no way to do there's no one-stop shopping for recruiting people in the northern New Mexico area. As I've mentioned, we have a very diverse and sparse population in the northern New Mexico area. But so far, the most successful recruiting strategy comes from word of mouth, from former students and from gatekeepers in the various communities, like in Taos or Española. And I try to reach out and find those people and then get them on my team as partners, or find ways to utilize them in the program, and that really helps. We also do a number of radio ads. I have a radio show on the Santa Fe Community College Public Radio that I do on Thursday afternoons, but I also go to the other talk shows and the Spanish-speaking stations around northern New Mexico and do presentations, and since I speak Spanish, I reach that population. Most of the people in New Mexico, northern New Mexico, even if they speak Spanish, they also speak English, but they listen to the Spanish-speaking stations because that's the music that they like to listen to. And then from the radio stations, I get a lot of applicants or recruits from the mothers who listen to the radio station, who nudge, encourage, or beat the crap out of their failure to launch children. We also hold information sessions. I try to do at least two or three information sessions so that people can come and ask specific questions. I've done two information sessions so far, and I have another two coming up next Wednesday in the Española area. So this is following up after we've done a lot of radio advertising. I also paid for a Facebook campaign, and while I had over 3,000, 4,000 people who looked at it and about 100, 150 who liked it, I only had probably 6 or 7 applicants from the Facebook campaign. So it cost me about $200 to do the Facebook-directed Facebook campaign, but it's a very diverse population, and you don't have much control over it. So my observations are on reaching my target audience is it's really difficult, and since there's no centralized information distribution mechanism in the northern New Mexico area, I have to follow a multiple avenue approach, and it depends upon which network and community I'm working in. How I get to people in Española is different than how I get to people at Santa Ana Pueblo or Powake Pueblo or Nambe Pueblo, or even to the other people. So another thing that seems to be impacting us is there is a low low unemployment rate, but it's mainly people going into the retail and the service industries which don't have careers. So one of the things that's really working for me this time that I'm really focusing on is that I'm offering a career path, not job training. And that has resulted this last time. I've probably at this point, I've got about 32 applicants, and we're still, you know, this next month we still have a lot more focused target marketing to do. So I'm hoping that that's really kind of helping me. On the last point, reaching your target audience, at least in my experience in this rural area, is you must be persistent and flexible. Those are the two pieces of advice that I would give to you. What works for one training cohort may not work for the next one because of the changes. So we also have to be extremely quick in changing direction when we see that something is or is not working. And the networking that I do for this training program, it doesn't end. It goes on constantly. And the other thing is you need to know your community and or hook up with the people who really know the community that you're targeting your audience into. And with that, I'll just kind of stop and wait for questions if anybody's got.
You know, one thing I noticed that I really liked in looking at your PowerPoint is you took it in a stepwise progression. You said, what is an environmental career? What are you going to be doing? And I remember back when Myra was an EPA, we went to a teacher's college and Morgan State, and I was in a focus group there. And we addressed this issue, and they said, well, in our community, environmental workers and technicians are viewed right down there with police officers. And I thought, what? They looked at it as someone coming into the community, disrupting the community, not members of the community, and they weren't interested in going into this, that they were concerned about their health. They thought they might be victimized a third time as an intrusion. And what Janet does here that's really neat is she spent a lot of time building up this idea of what is an environmental technician, and actually you're going into a career. And then she follows it up with, yeah, you can make a lot of money. And then she follows it up, well, how do I get involved? And then she says, well, this is how you get involved. And then she says, well, what can you expect from this program? And then she hits them with the $5,000 worth of credentials and the curriculum. And it's a great step-by-step progression from someone who knows nothing about this. And you have to assume that the people you're targeting know nothing about what does an environmental tech do. And you're kind of leading them through the whole process. I think that's really cool.
Well, Mike, in conjunction with that, I am on the 12th of April going to the high schools and the middle schools, because one of the problems I found when I connected with the environmental educators in New Mexico was they didn't know about this part of the environmental profession. So I'm trying to seed at a much lower level what an environmental professional does and open up their minds too.
And this is a little different than some of the other approaches we'll be talking about next time, like, you know, tryouts. We'll be talking about other approaches. But for Janice's area, where it's dispersed, it's difficult, you've got a lot of different populations, getting to those people has got to be extremely difficult. We have struggled with Native American programs because your program is no better than your recruitment. And trying to reach this diverse population of 22 tribes with high unemployment has got to be a real challenge.
Well, probably one of the biggest challenges, Mike, for my Native American populations is to commute into one location for training. It's an hour each way every day, if not 2 hours. That's been one of the biggest problems, I think. The other thing is trying to find jobs for everyone and everything, you know, that once they go back to their own pueblo. Especially my native, my populations, Hispanics and Native Americans, do not want to move to other parts of the state to get employment. So that's been an issue. But we still have a lot of job openings in northern New Mexico. And the other problem I have is the biggest employer, Los Alamos, has very stringent employment requirements, like you can't have any drug and alcohol pass, a good clean driving record. Let me tell you, in New Mexico, with the distances we drive, everybody gets a speeding ticket, okay? Those are some of the obstacles that I'm having to overcome as well. And I have a meeting with Los Alamos tomorrow to discuss with them. They apparently need 500 environmental technicians for the next 10 years. And they are currently importing them from other parts of the country and because they said they didn't have a qualified local workforce. And that's what I've been working on for, I would say, 15 or 16 years in New Mexico.
I noticed your training schedules. When you bring people into the program and they're applying, and I looked at your application. I like your application. It's very simple. You're basically getting contact information.
Right.
So you're doing this funnel approach where all you're doing, if you can get people to watch this PowerPoint, they're going to say, I'm interested. Or if you do this on your radio show or whatever, then they contact you. So now you've got kind of, they're on the hook, they're interested, you've got their time. And then explain the process after that. What do you do once you have their contact information?
I give them a phone call and we have a chat and I talk to them about what their understanding about this environment is. I also look to see if they would have any obstacles for, you know, getting into this career. For example, I just have to tell the people on medical marijuana, I can't help you because no one's going to hire someone into a hazardous material handling position if you have if you are on medical marijuana. The other thing I try to do is explain to them that, you know, I listen to if they have any disabilities or any other health issues, and I kind of sort through, and I'm pretty direct and honest with them about there's lots of room and a lot of places in the environmental field. It's not all field work, but there are certain disabilities like seizures, for example, that might prevent them from being able to obtain employment. So that's my first screening of people. Then the next thing is I invite them in for a sit-down interview. And the purpose of my interview is to get an idea of their personal presentation, their abilities, you know, get a better idea of what might be holding them back from getting a job so that I know what to work on. And this is all before they're actually in our system, when all of the rules that apply at community colleges start to apply to me. And I have to be even, you know, extremely careful about, you know, about being honest with people. If anybody who works at a community college out there knows, you know, there's things you can and cannot say to people. But you have to be honest with people. And then I sit down and I send out, you know, letters of acceptance or letter of rejection.
Now? Mm-hmm. Boy, he's a little chunkmeister.
He went from 6.4 pounds.
Hello?
18.7 pounds.
Is someone asking a question?
No, I think they're just talking.
Oh, okay. Okay. Okay, so
Is Myra still on the phone?
Myra, are you there? I don't know. Maybe she stepped up.
Yeah.
I'm on the phone.
Okay.
Myra, how does this thing, that this presentation, you know, if you're looking at it, how does that compare with when you guys all started out with this program?
Well, you know, you're doing an exceptional job with for your program and the needs in your area. You're doing exactly what you should be doing. You know, It's much more advanced than it was in the beginning of the program. Wouldn't you say, Mike?
Oh, yes. We've evolved through these best practices, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and in the beginning it was very, it wasn't difficult, but it was time-consuming in a way, getting people, the grantees, to
understand the concept of a career instead of a job.
It still is, Myra. It still is difficult.
Well, you know what? It sounds like you're doing a great job on it, but, you know, I guess people, you know, who haven't had a job in a while, they go, you know, they hear about the training, they haven't worked, so they're thinking, I'm going to get a job.
Okay. Yes, and managing those expectations is real tough during the actual training.
Yeah.
And then also, and this is one thing I'm having trouble, but and this is probably for another session, but once I graduate the applicants, they fall back very easily into their community and go back to their working at Burger King job or Target or something like that. They give up.
Yep.
And I spend a lot of time trying to be persistent with them about, here's some more opportunities, here's some more opportunities.
Yeah, and I don't know how you can really avoid that totally. But one thing that you had me thinking now is, you know, maybe from a national perspective and just from HMTRI's perspective and others, maybe we can get the NIEHS to help with this, or the Department of Labor, is it needs to be the idea, of the fact, not the idea, the fact of these jobs leading to careers need to be emphasized from the environmental aspect, you know,
right,
rather than this outside of the job training program or the community college program. It needs to be marketed and packaged, thank you for the word, better than it has been, because it's not. And when you think about it, you know, in general, people still think job instead of a career.
You know, and
so,
I would say, Myra, about 10-15% of my students get that it's a career and have done exceptionally well. It's still an uphill battle because at my Department of, my Workforce Solutions, which is my DOL here in New Mexico, they still focus and package everything as jobs. I've got a meeting with my governor to explain to her she's got to quit saying jobs. She's got to start saying careers.
That's right. They get credit by how many jobs or placements you have. That's what goes into the unemployment, you know, role, is the job. So it has to be packaged better. And because in this field, and we've been doing this now how many years, Mike? I mean,
over 20 years.
Yeah, it needs to be packaged. These jobs are leading, the first job they get is leading to a career if the person who gets the job wants it to be a career, and if the employer is building the whole job development aspect of it. The employer is promoting careers in the field. Mike, this is just something that needs to be, I would suggest, and of course I don't mind volunteering time to do it, package better.
Well, and that's a good topic at this all-grantee meeting that we're going to be doing, where we have the EPA assistant administrators and the people there. But, you know, over those years, we've found, when we're called in or we're found that someone is failing and they're going to lose their grant, it's because of recruitment. And what happens is they get the grant, and they got the first panic sets, and we got to fill the class, and they start taking people, and now their worst nightmare appears. Now we've got to do all the other seven steps to make this a successful program, and we can't do it because we've doomed ourselves in the first month of the operation by recruiting a bad class.
I'll tell you right now, my second cohort, and I won't admit this publicly anywhere else, but the cohort that I just finished it was really bad. Nothing really worked. And my first cohort did well, and this third cohort I'm doing is going to turn out to be well. But my second cohort, please take that into mind, you EPA people. It just didn't work out. And so I've used it as a learning experience, for the next phase.
This is difficult work. And, it's like buying a house. You're looking for a house. You better take your time, because after you've bought it, all of a sudden you find out, oh, this is a crummy house. I didn't like, you really have to fight the urge to fill up that class and just take your time, particularly for new, probably the hardest ones are the new grantees, for those of you who are looking to make a proposal. And if you're fortunate enough to get it, it could be your worst nightmare, or it could be the biggest lesson you'll have.
I'm a second grant person, and the first grant went, pretty good. It's the second grant where I've stumbled, but I've used it as a learning experience. Hopefully I'll get to the next, to the next level, because I've finally broken through in my community. And that's the other thing for you new grantees, when you first start up this program, is it takes a while to develop that network. It's not just 6 months, it's 3 to 5 years to develop it. And I've finally broken through and gotten the politicians on my side, because the first grant we were successful. This next grant, it hasn't been as successful as the first grant, but there are great successes in it, just not overall, And, it's just very frustrating, but we're getting there. But I finally was able to demonstrate this is a real career, and that I'm getting people on board as to what the need in the community is, and this has taken me 6 years.
Yeah, it takes a while.
It takes a while. You've got me, you all have got me thinking that, one of the things, Mike, for the grantees meeting is you could get grantees who had that success of putting, participants to work in a career, give a presentation, and how they've done that, how they've marketed it.
Excellent.
And then we can, work with national organizations to try to package it.
Right.
Well, let me know what I can do to help you, Myra. You can, if you need my contact information.
If it's all right, Janet, I'll put in the notes all your contact information.
And that would be fine.
And we'll also put in your training schedule. I had a question, and this is off topic of what we're talking about today, but I want to include your curriculum, which is excellent. I noticed, though, did you take out asbestos and lead because it doesn't fit in your needs assessment?
Because during the time that I'm doing it, we have a holiday, okay? We have a holiday. We have a Memorial Day holiday, and it was just a time constraint.
Okay.
I have to keep this to 5 weeks.
Yeah.
That's all that people can commit to when they don't have income coming into their home.
Yeah. Well, that's excellent. I know you use the 8-to-5 approach.
And the other thing is, for lead and asbestos, usually the employers, if they've got all these other things, which are the really expensive things, lead and asbestos are the cheapest certs to get.
Right. So
I made a decision. I just made a command decision.
I like your schedule of courses and the number of certificates you get, and exactly, you're right on. You're giving them about $5,000 worth of value just by attending your program. Excellent idea. Anyone out there have questions of Janet or Myra while we have them on the line? We'll be talking later on in these PLCs, and I hope to get Myra back on the do's and don'ts of submitting. We'll be doing this at a later date, when we get closer to about midway through the grant proposal process, of do's and don'ts and landmines. By that time, hopefully you'll have written half your proposal, and hopefully we'll come online and say, don't do this, and you're just looking at your proposal, and there it is. So you'll have time to strike it out. We want to make sure that you go into this in the best footing you can do.
Happy to assist.
Thank you, Myra, for your help and everything you've done.
Thank
yeah,
you.
And give me a call, Myra, and I can talk more to you about this if you would like.
I will. I'd love to.
Thank you, Mike.
Well, in summary, I think you've given us a great summary of do's and don'ts. We're going to elaborate these in the post-session notes. And I'm also going to put in Janet's contact information so you could call her or talk to her by email, however you wish.
Email is best right now since I'm in recruitment.
You're right in the middle of it. And
I'm in the middle of it.
We kind of consider yours as not an urban grant, but more of a rural tribal grant, which is the toughest grant to have. It really is, because your jobs are sparse, dispersed, your populations are dispersed. It's a tough demographic, and I have to praise you for doing what others have not been able to do. So congratulations, Janet.
Well, it's up and down, and I hope EPA understands that, but, you know, I try to create to learn from all the mistakes that I've made and adjust quickly and, you know, those kinds of things. So good luck to everybody out there for the next granting season.
Okay. Well, we're going to be convening again on April 10th, same time, same place, same phone number. And hopefully everyone will, maybe by that time we'll be in the midst of the pollen season. We'll talk more about it. It's funny, the last call we had, we were talking about snow, and Colorado was getting deluged with snow. Iowa is getting deluged with water now, so we'll see what comes up next. So thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Sorry.
I have one more thing to add.
Question.
This is Heather
question.
From HTRI, for any of those that are there. We do have, and this is just minor on our side of stuff, the email address that the listserv posts come from is going to change. It's going to change to jtgrantees@list.atech.org. You guys shouldn't notice anything different, but if all of a sudden you guys haven't been receiving listserv posts over the next couple of weeks, just shoot me another email again, and we'll kind of talk separately and see what's happening. I did include that on the last listserv posting as well. Again, shouldn't cause any issues for you guys at all, but if for some reason you don't receive any listserv posts from me, go ahead and give me an email at hkbaloo@eicc.edu, and we'll work on getting it straightened out.
Yeah, and you'll keep getting the PLC notes and everything, and if you don't get the notes, just contact Heather at that address she just gave.
Thanks.
What is that address again, Heather? Just one last time.
hkbaloo@eicc.edu.
Okay, great. Thanks, everybody, and thanks, Janet, and talk to you soon.